Hello and welcome to another edition of Game Warp. Today we are going to be looking at our featured game of the month for June, which is Life is Strange, developed by Don't Nod Entertainment as well as published through Square Enix. This is a little indie game which has really captured the hearts and minds of everyone who's really played it, as it's slowly become this fun little cult success, being released last year at the start in 2015. The game itself is like the Telltale games. It's a multi-choice game in which you follow Max. She's a photographer student who, in the prologue, she wakes to have this vision of a lighthouse being destroyed by a swirling tornado, only to suddenly discover she soon has the ability to rewind time. This really sets her on the path as she starts to discover the darker side of her little seaside town of Arcadia Bay, which is in Oregon. As she goes on, she reunites with her childhood best friend, Chloe, and the two try to track down her, basically, the friend that she was replaced with, known called Rachel. And Max, along the way, constantly finds out darker secrets that hiding within the town as she works her way towards this apocalyptic ending she's had this vision of. This is a game which will probably traumatize you in places with some of the choices that you make, and certainly the outcomes, as there is no choice really which doesn't have some larger outcome in the game, even while at the start, when you sometimes make these choices, they seem to have very minor effect, they will often come back and hit you hard. I'm going to warn in advance that this episode will be featuring spoilers, so if you've yet to play the game, be aware spoilers lie ahead. But to join me through this journey back and forth in time is my co-host, as always, Miss Kim Lowe.
Hi.
This was a game that we were both really excited about when we were obviously talking about the games we wanted to discuss on the show. Life is Strange, I think, was pretty much at the top of the list next to Unravel, which we covered on our first episode.
Yeah. I mean, choice-based games and story-heavy games are becoming a huge hype right now, and it's definitely one I really enjoy, especially because I'm kind of in the middle. I really like reading. I really like movies. And this is like, I like this sort of idea of having like an interactive movie, and it personalizes it to who you want Max to be.
Yeah.
And it really shows, like, you always have four options. You kind of have an idea of how things are going to impact you, but when it comes to the big choices, even the little choices, I felt like the game was really, in a way, it really manipulates you in thinking that, well, maybe you made a bad choice, and then maybe you want to go back. Because in episode one, I mean, I have to admit that it was an intro to the mechanics and to the characters and just the idea of, you know, like, every single choice you made kind of felt like it was the wrong one.
Yeah.
And then I would always rewind time and go back and then realize that, oh man, maybe I made the worst choice now.
I know what you mean. It certainly doesn't help that in those early choices, the fact that Max is really so angst-ridden for the first two episodes, she's really angsty. So you make a decision, for example, to whether you tell the principal or not about what you saw happening in the bathroom. And no matter which choice you make, she still makes you feel really bad about it, that this is like the worst outcome you could have chosen. But as you mentioned already, we have the option here to rewind time. So whenever you make a decision and it gives you that little guilt trip, you can rewind time and play it the other option and see whether it played out better. And obviously as the game goes on, your time rewind mechanic becomes ever more important as you can use it to achieve objectives, to get any of the numerous snapshots that you required, or just to change the outcome of your decisions. So let's just start obviously by discussing this time rewind mechanic, because it's really cleverly worked in the game. It's not a gimmick as such. It's used as an essential tool, really, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, I think it's very smart, especially because we have a little swirl on the corner of our screen when we're playing, and as you rewind it, there are points that actually show up. Sometimes there aren't, of course. Sometimes there's just one point in time where you can rewind to, and that's the point that it signifies where you should stop. But at the same time, you also know that these rewinds are having some sort of effect as well, because you see like the burn marks on the side of your screen gets bigger as that happens. And I mean, it's done really well to help you, you know, like there are choices where you make and you're like, okay, well, this plays out. I don't think that's a good idea. Well, I want to try and go back. I mean, you can go all the way from saving lives to just preventing something from happening, you know, like something small.
Yeah. I mean, the tone of the game, for myself, this game plays a lot like a somewhere between The Butterfly Effect and Brick. It was somewhere between those two films that I found Life is Strange. As obviously, with any decision you make, it will have a knock-on effect. So going back in time and changing things will affect things in the future. And certainly as the game goes on, you do have moments where you go further back in time. Again, yeah. Through the use of photographs, as in The Butterfly Effect, you can... It gives you a point, the ability to travel much further back in time than the few minutes that your normal rewind mechanic would give you.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but like, I feel that you didn't really like the butterfly effect mechanism put in here.
No, I liked the rewind time. I felt that if the game had stayed in the present, I felt that it would have been a lot stronger. However, we have not only... an awkward scene where we're sent back in time to try and save Chloe's father, who we find out through discussions with Chloe and just Max's own recollections died when she was a child. So we are given the option to go back in time and essentially save him. But being the butterfly effect, it has a nasty knock-on effect and leaves us with that real shocking ending to, I believe, episode 3.
Yeah, episode 3, definitely. I personally think... nearing the end, I think that was the awkward part, is that all of a sudden something happens and then we're sent back in time.
Yeah.
And it was a very abrupt way of doing it. And then we pretty much spend most of episode 3 just kind of in a butterfly effect phase. At least that's what I remember. I have to admit that there were, I think episode 3 and 4, especially 4, felt really, really dragged out. And there were a lot of really unnecessary parts.
Well, episode 4 is really where the game hits you the hardest emotionally. You're essentially forced into making some really hard choices at the opening half of episode 4. As it picks up directly where episode 3 ends, and we're still on this alternate timeline and having to deal with the outcome of the actions we make in it. Not that we choose to make, it's essentially what we're forced into choosing in episode 3. And... I don't know, it just felt like they were really going for an angsty moment, and it's a gamble that never really pays off. It never has a big sort of comeback moment in like the final episode. The choices you make, they never seem to have any sort of reconciliation. You would think that it would like come up and it'd be this big plot moment, but it never seems to happen. It sort of feels more like an experiment that they attempted and failed and just forgot to remove from the game.
I think that that's one of the main things I have a comment about in these choice-based games and how everything you do is supposed to have a consequence. But it has to really reflect on how interactive you are and how detailed and like just how much of a completionist you are in the game, I find.
Yeah.
You actually took a lot of like extra photographs, and I think you probably talked to a lot more people than my run-through was. I really did like a... almost like a speed run. I think we took a little bit more care as we did episode 4 and 5. But I mean, the idea of having your choices having impacts, have to really feel that there's an impact. Whereas I felt that a lot of the choices we made didn't really have a big, like, it's not like there's 10 endings. Seems to only be 2.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't like, I mean, very different from like what, I guess, what other games like Until Dawn has or something. I haven't played Until Dawn yet, but what I've heard is there are more than 2 endings. And that really is a sign of like how you approach the game really makes a difference. Like, I feel here, maybe because there's a rewind mechanism, you have a choice of going back on the final choice that you have. You have a time frame to do it, that maybe it's why, like, you don't feel the impact as much.
Yeah, I feel this certainly gives the player that sort of break, really, by the fact that they can rewind time. They can change their mind, which, when you look at the other Telltale games, like, you know, The Walking Dead, for example, where suddenly your choices really come into effect when it comes to choosing which of the survivors you're going to save. You never had that sort of feeling, really, with this game. When you make choices, they will often require you to take certain paths differently, when you encounter them. There's such as there's a group within the game of Poplarkins known as the Vortex Club. Now, if you befriend the members of the Vortex Club, there is a scene in the, I believe it's episode 4, where you're trying to get into the VIP area. Now, if you befriended them, they let you straight in. Whereas if you've decided to, you know, hold your ground and not fall in with these popular kids, you have to find an alternate route into the VIP area. And this is really where these game changes come into play. There are a couple of other big ones, which I believe play in more, such as a suicide attempt. That is another of those big changes. And I believe that it comes back more how certain characters react to you. If you obviously approach it one way, these characters will view completely differently than if it ends in the alternate sort of outcome. So while there is this big emphasis on the decisions you're going to make big change in the game, I think there's only about two or three of these moments which had the big sort of impact. The rest are sort of very minor and give slight variations on the game that you play. But I know when you were playing it, you were saying, when we were obviously discussing this as we were playing it throughout the month, and you were saying that you were making decisions with your husband, so you ended up having Max come off with this bipolar sort of attitude, I would have thought.
Well, how we approach these games is because, you know, it is a story-based game, and there's not a whole lot of action. So what happens is that we also play pretty late at night. So what we do is that we alternate between episodes, and actually for Life is Strange, we actually did it a little bit different, where we did half of episodes. So when, after a big choice, we would usually change the controller to someone else, so that, like, unless it was like really, really like stealthy scenes or something, then sometimes usually I just let my husband do it, because if it was for me, I'd probably panic and die a thousand times. Well, you can't die, which is, you know, I think we should also address the fact that the good part of having rewind power is to not die.
No.
And that is a plus, because that also means that, you know, your game will keep flowing, and you will never feel like the danger is, I think, in how much we've connected with the people around us at this point.
Yeah, I think the characters, certainly throughout this game, it's a very believable world that the game is set in. That when you're going through and you meet the various residents of Arcadia Bay or at the school itself, each character has their own distinct personality. And as you have more conversations with them, how they choose to react to them and the interactions you have with them will often change. For example, you have this sort of best friend called Warren, who, if you choose to engage in a relationship with him, it will upset one of the other characters, where if you blow him off, then she's quite happy with you. There's this nice living world that obviously you have in the world of obviously Blackwood Academy, as well as Arcadia Bay. And I think there's only one or two characters that don't really work, the janitor being one, mainly because he's got such a creepy voice. and there's another student who you constantly save from being hit with things, which she's got the most stupid voice.
It's really funny, because the character, I don't know if you always save her, but I always like make an effort to save her in different scenes that we're in. And then like nearing like the final episode when there's a part there, she's like, "But Max, you've always had my back." And then I kind of laughed at that part, because it was like, oh yeah, you know, I'm glad you notice it.
it's like, Max, you're my superhero. And she's got a horrible lisp. Which is probably a first for video games, but really, it doesn't work here.
Well, then it really brings in the Super Max.
Yeah. I have to also say that while it's this immersive world and you can read posters, you can talk to students, I ended up getting the same vibe that I got with Shenmue, where a lot of these people you don't really need to speak to, and a lot of them don't really have particularly interesting things to say, so you'll find yourself chasing your character down the hallway, only for them just to say something very benign and uninteresting.
See, that's the thing. That's why I said you're probably more of a completionist than I am, because actually in episode 1, because I was manning the controller, I actually skipped through talking to a lot of people. Mm. Like, all I cared about was how to get the paint bucket on top of, like, the bully girl Victoria's head, you know? I spent a lot of time trying to figure that out. and then I kept, like, bumping into the guy with the football. And he had nothing interesting to say. He just didn't talk. But, I mean, you know, it does bring me to a question, now that we've brought up a lot of characters. Which is your favorite character in the whole series?
Oh, unquestionably, it's Chloe. And this isn't just the fact that she's voiced by Ashley Birch of Hey Ash, What You Playing? I just think Chloe is just so badass. She's got the blue is the warmest color, sort of punky blue hair going on. She's a law unto herself and an absolute badass. And she takes us on this emotional journey because she puts off this tough front, yet at times we see her completely destroyed with the emotions that she struggles to, like, withhold. I mean, who for yourself was your favorite?
I definitely like Chloe, but I also thought that, like, I personally would have wanted more of Warren. I know you're not a big fan, but... I thought Warren was a very sweet character, and he created kind of like a balance of friendship. I would have liked to see more of his involvement in the story, but then I also get that Chloe is definitely a strong character, and that's the point of Life is Strange, is that if you don't connect with Chloe, you will realize that pretty much the game is about saving Chloe.
Yeah.
And, you know, it makes a lot of your choices become really stupid if you didn't connect with her. You probably wouldn't be able to finish the game.
I mean, I have to ask, I mean, you've obviously said Warren's your favorite. I would say Chloe. It's funny because between those three characters of, obviously, Max, Chloe, and Warren, we have this love triangle of sorts that happens, and the player can obviously influence how it plays out. I know you went down the path of you went with her going with Warren, I'm right in saying?
Well, I went kind of a rebel. I chose to kiss Chloe, and I also chose to kiss Warren.
When you look at the percentage of people who chose to kiss Chloe, 95% were all perverts. Yeah, I was determined that Max was going to get with Chloe one way or another. I didn't know what I had to do. So every choice that came up, it was always like, oh, this puts her in a better relationship like with Chloe. Let's go with that path. So I was determined they were going to get together.
The thing is, you do want, like, they do kind of put that choice for you, and it's a really obvious thing that they want you to go down that path. And I haven't had a lot of girlfriends, I hate to say, like, I have a lot of girlfriends now, like, as in, like, friends that are girls, and yet I've never been in the phase where, you know, we're very, like, touchy-touchy and huggy-huggy and,
yeah,
you know, like, all that stuff. Like, we're not, like, in that sort of intimate relationship. So for me, it actually felt like it was really hinting towards that. But I think that, in general, just... Max and Chloe's relationship their friendship is really, really a center point that I think that the developer, Don't Nod, does a really great job in the storytelling of, like, making us connect with that friendship so much. Making, like, Chloe be important enough for us to care about the choices you make and just keep going forward and feeling the danger, you know? And at the same time, I mean, as much as we don't acknowledge it, we actually, like, I think that it's a subconscious thing that happens, that we develop a relationship with Max and we fall into her character pretty quickly also.
I think with the character Chloe, though, and the fact that we obviously have this kiss scene between Max and Chloe, I put that really down to the fact that they're both essentially college students. So there's obviously that freedom for sexual experimentation and thing that it's no big deal in that respect. So you can view it as just this flirtation between friends, and I love the fact that Chloe, especially as the episodes go on, she really brings out the rebellious side of Max, who, when we meet her, she's sort of very shy and retiring, and the more time she spends around Chloe, she becomes more forceful, she becomes more open and just a lot more confident. And you get to the scene where she's in the diner and you have the ability to basically pick a fight with the local drug dealer Frank, and you can go in and throw his beans on the floor. It's one of the options that you have. It doesn't end well, but you do have the option there to do it. Again, Frank is another fascinating character that we have. While he's the drug dealer, so he's essentially the sleazy guy in this story, he's got this connection to Rachel that really adds a new depth to his character. And I love the fact that no character, there's a lot of these main characters that are a lot deeper than they first seem. There's no character who's sort of like just what they are on the surface. Everyone seems to have their secrets that they're hiding.
Yeah, well, I think that's why the characters are fun to look at, especially, like, the big characters that we have, is that everybody kind of has a little secret.
Yeah.
And as we go through and we talk to more people, we start learning a little bit more about them. I mean, I didn't engage with Frank too often, mostly because I knew he was dangerous. And I kind of didn't want to, I guess it's a reflection of my character, like, my personality, of why I would rather avoid danger than like go and throw his beans on the floor and obviously have him beat me up or something. So, you know, I mean, my goal in the game was to survive and live through it. But it would have been nice. Like, if I were to play Life is Strange again, which I will, I'd probably be really, really, like, make really outrageous choices. Just, like, you know, choices that really go against who I am. Just because you can't do it in real life.
I know what you mean. I think next time I play for it, I will probably go in a much more rebellious mode than I was. I think I was playing it very safe in places because you don't want to lose potential connections with characters. That was obviously a big concern of mine. And at the same time, maybe I would have seen if Warren turned like Warren down completely, and so I could obviously have better reactions from other characters. There's a number of different options that are there, and the fact it only gets more complex when you start looking at things such as Max's journal, which is constantly updating, or you have SMS messages from various characters. And I mean, this is even getting into the fact that there's each chapter or episode has certain photographs that you have to take because Max is a photographer student. So there's certain shots it hints that you have to take. So you can spend a great time just trying to find these shots or figuring out what you have to do to line them up, because a lot of the time you have to use Max's rewind power to essentially get the shot you need. So there's a whole wealth of depth to this one, and as you said, I think it lends itself well to replay value in that respect.
Definitely. I mean, if I were to do this again and it wasn't like a time crunch for recording, I'd definitely be more like detailed. Like, I know that I think you took a lot more pictures than I did. I only took the bare minimum of what was needed, and I took like maybe 3 other extra pictures. Like, I didn't spend a lot of time talking to a lot of people. I didn't really like, you can tell that because at the end, I really like these choice-based games, because at the end of an episode, you get a recap of your choices, whether based on the community who played this game, whether your choices were in the majority, the minority, and also the choices that you didn't get to make. And I think that that's one of the parts I really enjoy. I was mostly in the majority, with a few exceptions, of course.
Yeah.
But it's really nice to see, like, the comparison of what other people chose, and, like, maybe, like, even at the end, of course, the payoff is in episode 5 to see what ending everyone chose as well.
We've obviously got this main storyline with Max and Chloe. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we have this other major plotline running in it with the character Kate, who's sort of the good Christian girl. She's lived this sort of sheltered Christian life, and she ends up being caught up in this plot by the Vortex Club, where she's basically filmed making out with a number of students. There's actually a link that gets written on one of the mirrors that will take you to a blog. And when you try to place the video, it says that the video has been removed, which ties in very nicely with the story and obviously the outcome of actions you make in trying to help Kate. While her subplot, it feels like just like a minor subplot, it does eventually tie into the much larger story. So, I mean, how did you obviously find Kate's story?
I mean, Kate's story highlights just the importance of noticing a lot of things around us, and but Kate is really just a medium to carry us into the investigative part of this whole plot, you know? So I think that her character is pretty good. It's done really well. I mean, she was there for so little time.
Another thing I really love about this game is the sheer amount of pop culture references we get throughout the game, from the number plates, which spell out different movies and TV shows.
Twin Peaks and all that.
Yeah, you can find one for Buffy the Vampire Slayer in there. And when you get, like, the journal entries especially, that we hear a reference things such as Battle Royale, Tetsuo the Iron Man. So you have all these, like, obscure Japanese movies as well being referenced. So if you're a fan of pop culture or certainly cult cinema and TV, there's a whole load of little Easter eggs in there which you can spot and enjoy. And I think that's why I warmed the character Max so much, because she felt like those sort of nerdy girls that I'd known before and that I would certainly like to hang out with. The fact that she likes all these obscure and bizarre things that I like, which makes her really a fun character to be around, obviously, on this journey you have to take, even though...
Yeah, even under all the angst and emo versions of her, yes.
Yeah, even though her music tastes suck, there's so much shoegaze in this game.
Well, I actually like, I think that it's more in line with, like, I actually like this sort of music a little. Like, I'd say like 70% of the tracks I really liked, you know. There were a few that I'm not so sure about, you know, but yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that's done well. I think even like in a majority way, I think a lot of things are done well. Like, I want to talk about the story, but at the same time, I feel like it's hard because we both took different paths. So, you know, I guess what I do want to know the most is, what was your favorite episode?
My favorite episode, I go back and forth over what was my favorite. I loved episode one, and the scene I loved in particular is when you come out of the class and it gives you the title for Life is Strange episode one, Chrysalis. And the soundtrack is provided through Max's Walkman. It's not playing in the background, it's because she's listening to the Walkman, and you're going down the hallway and you're seeing different members of Blackwood Academy. That you can obviously interact with or choose. You can see the posters, and the fact that you've got this song playing and it's for a Walkman, I thought that was really great. At the same time, I also loved episode four, when you go to the Vortex party. I thought that again, that was really great, and the ending destroyed me. I'm not going to spoil for what happens at the end, but yeah, it just comes completely out of nowhere, and it made me really want to leap into episode five, even though it was like past midnight and I really should be going to bed at this point, instead of just like trying to find out what happens next. And it's certainly something what the game does well is that every cliffhanger makes you want to leap into the next chapter.
You know, my thing is, I like with me, I also thought I also think that episode one was the strongest, followed closely by episode five, and then it would be episode four probably.
Really? You liked episode five?
I thought five was really clever, but then five and four are very close together. I think it's because five is a little bit more tight-knit. There are some parts which seem to come out of nowhere. Like, there's this big long sequence that comes out of nowhere, which got me like, come on, let's just move it along and move it along, you know. But episode four also felt that way. Like, episode four was by far the longest episode we played. We were playing it for, I think it was almost 3 hours that we were playing that level. It was really long, and I mean, it could be because I was tired as well, but I mean, I was just at a point I was just like, okay, can this end like right now? Like, I was playing it around midnight too, so I was like, I just want to go to bed right now. Can we just stop, you know?
I know what
But
you mean.
my point with the episodes is that we made a really good comparison. Like, I'm a fan of True Blood, and I don't know if, like, if you don't really like True Blood a lot, the general idea of the structure of a True Blood episode is that there's nothing, 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 slow, 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 and then the last 15 minutes is action, 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 and then cliffhanger ending, you know? And this is pretty much the structure of the episodes of Life is Strange, except for episode one.
Yes, I'm going to disagree with you completely because I really didn't like where episode 5 went. The reason why is that whereas the other episodes we felt that we were constantly moving, if it's like the discovery of the dark room, or if it's just, you know, walking along the train tracks with Chloe, there was something happening, there was always something interesting, though, if we're exploring the junkyard. But episode 5, the first half of it, we're listening to the bad guy monologue. We then go into this weird David Lynch-esque universe where we just constantly seem to be having like surreal and nightmarish imagery thrown at us. And then we've got a horrible stealth section which had no place in this game whatsoever.
Yeah, I remember you wrote a huge thing about that on
And it just basically felt like it was just playing up on the Scarecrow section of Arkham Asylum. In the fact that you were constantly having to avoid these flashlights. Or you were basically detecting you had to start again. And I was like, do we need a stealth mode in this game?
Well, you know what it is that I think you know what, it's hard to pinpoint what the second favorite episode is, because episode one does everything right and it gets you really geared up for the game, because it's quick, it's simple, it's tight-knit, it's straight to the point, it sets everything up perfectly. You have a good idea of the characters you're going to be dealing with for the rest of the thing and the dangers that you're going to occur, like you know, with Vortex Club and all those things that's happened, and we know where we're going to be heading out. It's going to be kind of investigative, it's going to be kind of rebuilding our friendship with Chloe and that sort of thing. But as the story goes along, I feel that, you know, like, there are downfalls to every single episode. Episode 2, I mean, it was fine. I liked the train tracks. I liked the ending. I liked saving Chloe from the train tracks. Like, yeah. I thought all that stuff was really great. But
you ever let the
one
train
part
hit her?
That I hated, like, I hated even more than that stealth part, was in the second episode, we had that meaningless bottle searching part. And I wanted to, you know what, that is, like, full transparency. We had to go and look it up online. Because it was in the most ridiculously obscure places.
Yeah.
And I got so angry at the game, and we were like, we were about to quit. We were seriously about to quit. And we were like, you know what? We got to tough this out. And then that's why we took like 2 weeks break from Life is Strange before we went back into episode 3, because episode 1 was great. And then episode 2, just that part made it feel like garbage. And then we were like, oh my God, I don't know where episode 3 is going to go, but I sure hope there's only uphill from now, you know?
I mean, episode 3, again, that's a clumsy episode, because
yeah.
It's really just sort of pushing that forced lesbian angle, really, isn't it? By, oh, let's yeah. break into the pool. Oh, where's this one going to go?
You know, yeah, you know, you got the... But it has some solid stuff, and there was also a stealth scene in that one. I think that was where... That's why they implemented the really extreme one in the fifth part.
Yeah.
I know the fifth one was very frustrating too. I'm okay. I actually don't have as much of an opinion about the butterfly effect. I thought that episode 3 was not memorable, like in the fact that I didn't really remember what went on in episode 3, but I did think that it was not too long and had a decent pace in building where they wanted to go.
Yeah. I think episode 3 is more memorable for its ending than that horrible moment where you essentially go back to Max and Chloe's childhood.
Exactly.
And there's that attempt to obviously save Chloe's father. And that was, again, that was another scene which I felt, oh God, I can see what you're trying to do here.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all like, well, it's understandable. Max has got the ability to go back in time. Why wouldn't she go back and try and save Chloe's father? Especially as we find that we obviously constantly see how much Chloe hates her stepfather, who I really love the turnabout they did for David. The fact that he's basically built up as this jerk and complete jackass in the first 4 episodes. And then out of nowhere, they change him and he's awesome.
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, we're movie buffs. Okay, come on. We're movie buffs. And we're watching an interactive movie, which is, I mean, this is one of the questions I did want to ask you was, you know, I think that the game works too hard to make David, which is the stepfather of Chloe, to make David look like he's the bad guy. And because they've worked so hard to paint him in such a, like, just in a bad light, that I knew that he had nothing to do with it.
I never assumed that he had anything to do with the main plot. So I never assumed he was our killer. Or our big villain of the piece.
Yeah.
I just thought he was a jerk.
Yeah, so okay, like, because I don't want people to know who is the killer.
No.
I do want to ask, were you surprised that it was that person?
Oh, I was totally surprised. I thought it was I thought it was someone completely different, and it's well done. I mean, the fact that some people may query the fact that the reveal of the killer is like a bit of a cheat because you never get any indication it could be this person.
I have to disagree with you though. Kind of like, by the time we were interacting with this person in later episodes, I kind of had a feeling it was that person already.
Oh really?
Like, yeah, because there are many, many little clues that piece it together, and it makes sense of what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
But I think episode 4 does, other than, I think if you talk about, like, right now that I'm thinking about it, other than the fact that episode 4 was really, really long, I actually think it might actually be better than the fifth one. Just for the fact that there is one little thing that I actually like a lot, and I wish they had done more of, and that was the investigation mechanics of, like, piecing, like, a puzzle of clues and photos and looking at those things. I really like that part a lot. I don't know. What did you like? Did you like it?
I liked it. When there were certain elements of the board which took me longer to figure out. I think it's where you're trying to place where Nathan is, and you have to use the time stamps in the diary to sort of figure out which location they're talking about. I mean, that was the trickiest part. I loved how it all pieced together, and you have to select the three clues to bring it all together. I thought that was a really nice mechanic.
And it's one of the things, like, if they didn't do that, I actually might have seen the game in a different way, because right now that I've seen that they did this, I would have actually wanted to see if they had done Life is Strange in a very investigative way, you know, where it was more of this investigation and less of the butterfly effect, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, it would have been a lot of fun to do that. And going back to what you were saying about episode 5 and the monologue of the killer, I actually didn't mind it. I thought that was, like, it was a really good way to demonstrate a character, because it kind of brings us into the mindset a little bit more, so we understand what they're thinking of.
Okay.
You know, and their motivations. And it kind of pieces the puzzle together as to why this person makes sense into doing this.
There's so many elements to this game I don't want to ruin for people, and that's why I'm being kind of tiptoeing around it, and it's probably sounding a little clumsy to the listeners, so I do apologize about that, and...
Yeah, but for people who have played the game, they will know what we're talking about, unless, because I feel like we're talking about the major parts, and it's not those little things which the choices we made would have been insignificant.
No, I mean, I really love to hear people's sort of feedback, so no matter where you're obviously listening to it, be it it's on our YouTube page, or if it, you're listening to us on Facebook or Twitter, because we obviously this would be posting all our usual places. We're also on SoundCloud as well, so let us know in the comment section which way you went, if you played this game, or what sort of choices you made. We'd love to obviously hear some feedback of the paths that you chose in this game, because obviously, just between myself and Kim, we took very opposite paths. So it'd be obviously interesting to see where everyone else went.
Well, I think as a general note, right from the beginning of episode 5, I feel like my general feeling towards episode 5 is maybe, like, as you put the pieces together, like, there are a lot of good things about it, but then the game technically falls apart in the sense that the story is not really a story. There's not really much of a story. It's just building up to your final choice, and it's just, you know, walking through the moves of it. And reliving a lot of things and, you know, looking at a lot of things we've done and whatnot. And it's kind of like game telling you in a certain way of, I don't know, maybe just, it's like what you said, punishing our choices, regardless of what you chose. And then in episode 5, we always have a recap of the episode before that. And I remember one choice really, really profoundly about whether you can warn Victoria, which is the bully girl, whether that she's going to be the next victim and that she should be careful. And I didn't warn her.
Oh my God. That's so dark of you, Kim.
No, because I made a conversation. I was talking with her about something, and she had a really bitchy reply. and I got angry and I was like, no, I'm not going to warn her. So I didn't get it. I didn't warn her. But in episode 5, I got the recap where I did warn her.
Yeah.
And I got like, and I was like, well, that doesn't make sense, because I thought that these things were geared towards the choices you made. I don't know if like you had the same thing in previous ones, because I was the majority in many of the previous things, and not warning Victoria was one of those minority things that I did, you know?
Okay. I mean, I think I was in the majority for most of them. So mine matched up for myself. So.
Okay. Anyways, cause that was one of the flaws I felt was in episode 5. And then on top of that, when we hit the two whales diner and things like that, there were certain parts where the lips don't move as the characters are talking. And that was like little oversights through the things scattered around that happened in episode five. And it felt like, you know, they were really rushing to finish the game. And I think that was the general feeling I felt about episode 5. Like, there were many things like episode 4, I didn't think it needed to be that long. I thought that a lot could be cut out. But then, I mean, at the same time, I felt like they dragged it on, just like episode 5, so that we would have a full game.
I would like to say that we both liked this one.
I think we did. I mean, what would be, what score would you give it out of 5?
I'm going to give it an overall score. I'm not going to go and score each individual episode.
Of course.
I think I'm going to go with 4. I really enjoyed this game. It's visually great with the use of the Unreal Engine. It means that it's visually very interesting to look at. While it's an immersive storytelling, it's the chapters are long enough that you'll probably find yourself breaking it into two plays, often because the dialogue at time can get a bit heavy, especially if you insist on talking to everyone like I do. There's certainly a lot to enjoy, some great twists and turns, and the choices in there I feel really worked well with the story. I feel it was a really great experience. But what did you think, Kim?
I actually would give it a little lower. I'm going to give it a 3.5, leaning into a 4.
Okay.
Like, more towards a 4 than a 3. Mostly because there are parts that need to be polished. There are episodes that are dragged out, and the story could have been a little bit more tight-knit.
Yeah.
I know that I did miss a lot of things, so I can't really be like, maybe rank it better if I played it in a little bit more detail. But, I mean, my overall, I think that 3.5 is still a very positive one leading into 4, you know. So, I mean, I liked it. I had a lot of fun playing it. I would have enjoyed it if I wasn't as busy and I wasn't so tired as I played it.
I know what you mean. It's it can be a bit heavy, especially on the talky ears and places, but...
Yeah, it's talky, and it also has this, like, you have to make pretty important choices. And it's very, like, psychologically, it also is very heavy.
Game is obviously available now. You can also pick up the limited edition version of the game, which comes with an art book, soundtrack, as well as the director's commentary as well.
Yep, that's the one I have.
At the moment, there is playing in place for Life is Strange Part 2. At the moment, no details obviously confirmed whether it's going to follow Max and Chloe again, or if it's going to be like True Detective and follow a whole bunch of new characters. But Kim, as the sort of final thought on Life is Strange, are you interested in playing a Life is Strange 2?
Well, yeah, I really think it potentially... I feel like following Max and Chloe doesn't really make sense anymore, because in a story like this, everybody would have made different decisions. So who are you going to appeal to? But on that note, I'm still willing to see how they build a new character and a new story, if that's the path they choose. And how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see where it went. I would love as well for them not to include so much Jose Gonzalez on the soundtrack. You know, it's all like, oh, do we need this? I don't know, maybe a little more upbeat soundtrack instead of so much shoegaze. But I think it's to each their own, really. I think there's people out there who are going to obviously adore the soundtrack, and it does complement what's happening on the screen very well. It just at times felt, I don't know, just a little too shuffling in places for my taste, but to each their own, as they say. But yeah, that's Life is Strange. Kim, do you want to wrap this one up?
For sure. So thanks so much for listening. I'd also like to give a thank you for the viewers that were on YouTube and gave us, we actually hit over 100 views in our last episode, which gave us, I think I can speak for Elwood and myself, that gave us a huge boost in confidence. So we're really excited to see where this goes. On that note, if you enjoyed this episode, please like, subscribe, and comment. We'd love to hear your thoughts and any game recommendations that you have. To catch our episode on the go, you can find us on SoundCloud at Game Warp Podcast. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook with the same handle at Game Warp Podcast. To read more game reviews, you can find us at our home base, thatmomentin.com. And we even have little news bits that we update. That applies for Twitter and Facebook as well. So thank you so much for listening. And do you want to tell them what we're doing next episode?
Next episode, we are still staying on the indie game scene. We're going to be looking at a game which I know, Kim, you introduced me to. And that game is Oxenfree.
Yay, Oxenfree! Yeah, this is this game I've been excited almost as much as Life is Strange and Unraveled. So I'm really excited to talk about that, but I think it's time to go.